Hello and welcome to the Corporate Buzz Podcast. I'm your host, Kirtana Tiwari, and I have Moneycontrol's Corporate Bureau Chief, Prince Thomas, with me to find out more on what made news in India Inc. this week. Hi, Prince. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Kirtana. Thank you.
Prince, let's start with the biggest news that happened in the auto sector. Mm-hmm. Harley Davidson suddenly shut its operations in India. Can you explain why they made this decision?
It was actually some inkling had come before itself. You know, there were reports or, you know, buzz in this industry that Harley Davidson is reviewing its operations in many markets, not just mm-hmm. India, but many of the markets where its volumes are low.
Okay.
And this it was doing because overall the company had been facing some headwinds. Its profitability was down, its sales were down. Mm-hmm. So it was trying to see how it could, you know, limit its cost. And one way was to probably rationalize operations or wind up completely in markets where its volumes weren't that great.
Right.
So it's not surprising that India is one of the countries where it has decided to do it.
Mm-hmm. So
there was some inkling, but yes, now we have confirmation from the company itself.
Right. And what does this mean for other motorbike companies, especially its, close competitor, Royal Enfield?
So we can't really say that Royal Enfield competes with Harley Davidson, because Royal Enfield's products are in completely different price segment.
Okay.
And Harley Davidson is much more higher on the premium side.
Mm-hmm.
The problem though with Harley Davidson is that it's not been able to, you know, really make a mark despite its iconic status. Mm-hmm. You know, after all these years, it just has about 25,000 customers in India. And it has struggled to really cater to the market. One could debate if it is because of its product portfolio, because whatever we say, India is a price sensitive market.
Right.
So is that the reason, or is the reason because it was it didn't have a local partner? If you look at some of the other premium bikes, including Triumph, all of them have local partners. So that helps them to reduce costs when it comes to manufacturing, or even perhaps in terms of say and the network that they have across the country. Mm-hmm. But Harley Davidson didn't have that, and there were rumors in between that probably it has reached out to some of the local auto companies in India for a partnership, but looks like nothing worked out. So given that the volumes were so low already, I don't think it made sense for the company to keep operating this, despite them having an assembly unit in India. And that was set up just in 2011. So in less than a decade, it has actually shut shop, which is not new or unique to Harley Davidson, but then one would have thought a company like that would have a more staying power, especially in a market which is growing. In India, the premium segment for bikes would be very tiny right now, but then it will grow.
Right.
But surely Harley Davidson has liquidity problems and it had to take some tough decisions.
Right. Well, any word on what will happen to the existing owners? And the other question I had was, since you mentioned that Harley Davidson is moving from many other countries as well, what exactly would be the fate of the company?
So existing customers will have a problem. That's the unfortunate part. The thing is, I think as our story on Moneycontrol itself had portrayed, that customers are already facing problems sourcing parts.
Okay.
If that was because of COVID, or was that problem happening before that? But the fact is that they were facing problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so that problem may accentuate now in the going forward, because the dealers that the company had, those dealers will shut shop. So that means the network will again narrow down. So that would become a problem, unfortunately, for all Harley Davidson owners in India. So replacing a part may take months now. I mean, if it was already taking months, it will take even more.
Okay.
So that is the unfortunate part. It is exiting from many countries, and I think that is may probably be good for Harley Davidson overall, because that would mean its resources are not spread thin, mm-hmm. Its cost will be limited, and probably it will be easier for it to really come out with a plan to rejuvenate its sales. It will be probably a smaller but sharper company after this exercise. If it does well in this new exercise and the markets then improve, there is no reason for the company not to come back to India again, because the whatever the, its iconic status remains. Mm-hmm. So there would be interest again. So, but then I think that that is years away.
Right. Moving on to another major news this week, this Shapoorji Pallonji Group announced that it will be parting ways with Tata Sons. And okay, this news came on the same day on the Supreme Court hearing, where court had ordered a stay on the pledge or transfer of the Tata Sons stake held by the SP Group. So is this was this an expected announcement, or why exactly did they make this decision?
I wouldn't say it was expected, but it's quite a setback for the Shapoorji Pallonji side. Mm-hmm. Because they were hoping that they could use the stake, their stake in Tata Sons to raise funds. Because they have a lot of debt obligation. They need to return money to the group company. And some of the debt, I think, covenants they had already broken. So they are in a tight spot. But they always thought that they could bank upon the stake that they've been holding in Tata Sons. The family has been holding for over 70 years, mm-hmm. 70, 80 years. And it was almost like, you know, a treasure family possession, because the stake value, I mean, there's wide estimates right now, but if one estimate is to be believed, the stake could be as high as, valued as high as 1.4 lakh crore. So, or even more. But it is worth at least 75,000 crore. Mm-hmm. You know, so that is a huge amount, from 75, anything between that range. And it had actually pledged the shares and had raised funds from the banks. But the Tata Sons, they objected to it, and they, because they said they have the right of first refusal. So it is complicated, and we've seen that ever since Cyrus Mistry was asked to step down from as the chairman of Tata Sons in 2016, there a lot of legal suits have been filed against each other, you know, and the fight has been on for 4 years now. So there have been you know, different developments, but this is almost like, you know, that big development where probably will force at least one side to say that, okay, I am ready to come to the negotiating table. And probably the best would be for both of them to negotiate it. And if the Shapoorji Pallonji family is ready to divest the stake, then I think, let's see if Tata would be willing to buy it out.
Some reports were suggesting that this separation will not be a smooth process. Why exactly are they saying that?
So it won't be smooth for one. Tata's have to agree that, okay, they will buy.
Okay.
And second, the valuation will be a big debating point, because let's face it, the Tatas themselves as a group, and if you look at specific group companies, also facing liquidity crunch, you know. And though they have always, their cash cow has been the TCS, and they probably may need to divest some stake in TCS to raise money and buy the stake held by the Pallonji family in Tata Sons. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the valuation again, what is the valuation they would get for TCS? So the valuation for the stake held by the Pallonji family in Tata Sons would be a debating factor. Pallonji would want as high as possible, and the Tatas would want to bring it down as much as possible. So the mediation in that front would be very, very critical. And I think reports and experts have said that it is probably someone within the Parsi community who will have to do the mediating role.
Right.
So who would that be, or will someone externally do that, or will it be mediated by the or overseen by the courts? Mm-hmm. All these are things that we need to see. But then I think on 28th, there is the Supreme Court hearing. Probably we'll get some more information then. But right now, the one family, Pallonji family, saying that is ready for separation. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite a huge development in one of the most storied business family associations.
Right. And with, you know, the valuation being in the future, it will definitely develop even more in the coming weeks.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Coming to the third topic of the day, we actually haven't spoken about this in a long time. Mm-hmm. It's the vaccines, the developments in the vaccine race. We right. now have this new interest coming up in the intranasal vaccine space. And this week we saw two deals that were made by, one was Serum Institute. They made a deal with Codagenics, and the other one was with Bharat Biotech and Washington University School of Medicine. Can you talk a little more about this, and how soon will these come out?
That's the critical question facing all of us, isn't it?
So, right.
That's, by the same time, it is as open a question as ever, because we really don't know when any of these vaccines would come. Though there are other vaccines which have, you know, entered the third stage of trials.
Right.
And there have been, I think there have been comments from international leaders that by the end of the year, some vaccine would be available. But how soon you and me would be getting it, it's a question mark.
Yeah.
But there is an interest in intranasal for several reasons. One, I think the two deals show that in India and Indian pharma players have been among in the forefront in this vaccine development across the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Serum has been one of the biggest players. It has tied up with multiple vaccine developers. Then we have Bharat Biotech. We saw that Dr. Reddy's lab also tying up with Sputnik, the Russian vaccine, for a deal. So one, I think, is underlines the importance that the Indian pharma companies are playing in this vaccine development and in this fight against COVID-19. And second is the trend for intranasal. And intranasal has its benefits. One, I think it's easy to administer because you don't need an injection, so you don't need the apparatus for all that.
Mm-hmm.
It can be self-administered. And the some studies have shown that probably it is more effective also because we are dealing with a virus which is transmitted through nose in one of the ways, right? So something which is intranasal may probably have more impact in arresting its growth. So there are many reasons for it, and cost of production thus may be lower, and it will be faster to produce it also and bring it to the market. Mm-hmm. So there are many aspects to it. So will it be eventually be more effective than the other vaccine? We don't know, but some studies and experts have said that it could be effective. The important thing to note is that there's only one other nasal spray vaccine that is there and which has been approved in markets like in Europe and US, and which is the AstraZeneca's flu mist.
Okay.
Now, and this is a vaccine against H1N1 influenza. So nasal spray vaccines are rare, but given the nature of the demon that we are fighting here, I think probably this probably also has a good chance to succeed against COVID.
Mm-hmm. We've also been discussing about how India will be the manufacturing hub when the vaccine has been approved and all that. What would India do after that? Will we be exporting vaccines as a priority, or will we be first supplying it to our citizens?
So the all these deals that international companies have been having with the Indian companies, it's either just for the Indian market. Mm-hmm. Or it is for the subcontinent or some of the other Asian market or probably Africa.
Okay.
So India then becomes a base not just to cater for the Indian market, the domestic market, but also for exports.
Mm-hmm.
But India in itself is a huge market. And given the fact that we are number two now in terms of infections and deaths because of COVID, there is an immediate humanitarian need also that, Indians do get it as soon as possible. We can't say we should get before someone else, but then there is high priority for the vaccine to be distributed in India.
Mm-hmm.
Be it the health workers, the doctors, people who are working, doing essential services. So there is an immediate need. So that would be the biggest concern and the priority right now.
Lastly, Prince, this week we had seen a report on how there are new age gig jobs coming up in especially banking and IT sector. Can you explain how this will work and, if this will give solution for the many people who are unemployed at this point?
So, yes, Kripna. So, gig is a very good positive development for people who have lost jobs during this COVID-19,
Right.
And the interesting part about development about this gig is that much of it is for those in the midterm and senior level. And these are in the spaces of bank, financial services, and where we have seen that there have been a lot of job losses. So these gigs last for about 8 to 10 months, and the report also added that the salary levels are comparable to someone who is having a permanent job.
Okay.
So I think it's a great development to have. And like last week we had already discussed that, you know, the festive season is throwing up many opportunities. Mm-hmm. That is at the low skill level. But here now we're seeing that even the high skill segment, there is a need for talent, and companies are looking at it. For companies, it's beneficial because these job requirements could be project based. So once the project is done, then the contract is over. And second, even as we say that the salaries are comparable, but still the final cost to the company will be lower when compared to a full-time employee. So it works both ways. And I think one, especially it really helps women who have been forced to leave the jobs for various reasons. Now this will help them also.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good thing to happen, and the only hope is that right now the job openings here is maybe in 2000s, but the hope would be that it expands even more and there are vacancies for more people.
Prince, this news is just in. We are seeing that telecom major Vodafone has won a case against India over retrospective tax demand. This happened in the International Court of Justice. The case was filed in 2016 due to a lack of consensus between the two parties.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe what exactly this was about and how big this win is for Vodafone?
Yeah, sure, Kitna. So I think this is one big positive news coming from Vodafone.
Mm-hmm.
And this really goes back to 2007 when Vodafone had bought, the mobile phone business from Hutchison, Vamco in India.
Okay.
And the problem came in 2012 when the then government said that it had gave itself powers to retrospectively tax deals. So, which means that the 2012 legislation could also tax a deal that happened in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the government said, you know, there was a claim of, I don't know, I think it was over 22,000 crore or even more on company. And then Vodafone had challenged this.
Okay.
And then I think it went to the International Court of Justice, which set up the bench in 2016. So this will come as a huge relief for Vodafone. But we'll have to see how India reacts to it. Will it appeal it? What are the facilities to appeal against this, and what is the effectiveness of a International Court of Justice giving a judgment like this? But then it will be a relief for Vodafone, because as we've seen in the recent AGR case, it has a huge liability in terms of making payments.
Right.
So if it does get some relief here, I think it will be a welcome move. But I think we should wait for some more details to come in before really taking a final word on this.
Right. Thank you so much, Prince, for all these details.
Welcome, Ketna.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of Corporate Buzz. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.